Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, for healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Welcome to the show. I think I got a great topic, guys, today. Negotiating, show 324. Negotiating with your medical doctor. The art of the deal. That's on your mind. Nobody likes to go to the doctor. Let's face it. We put it off as long as we can until we must. And that's not just allopathic doctors. That's not just medical doctors. Holistic doctors, any kind of doctor, because we associate that office visit usually with the potential for hearing bad news, and it wrecks our day, if not everything else. So it's not a pleasant thing, but something's going on in American culture today. What was once not a pleasant thing is now becoming a horrifying experience. And that has to do with a lot of reasons I want to get into today to make your life a lot easier. First of all, my holistic fans who tend not to want to go to doctors because of what doctors do. My first bit of advice is use the doctor to your advantage. Medical doctors are important. Medical doctors deserve respect. And we forget that all too many times because generally the people into holistic medicine, the people that listen to shows like this, are the people who aren't going to get cut and do surgery, and they're not going to do pharmaceutical drugs. Sometimes that's a bad idea. Sometimes you gotta have a surgery, and sometimes you have to do pharmaceutical drugs. And that's why you want a good medical doctor in your corner. I came to Orange County 5 years ago, and I have worked relentlessly to build a team of medical doctors around me that I can depend on. And they're not just in Orange County. And I think that's important to note. And what does that mean to you? Your team of medical doctors may be an international team. Your team of medical doctors may not just be from Orange County. They might well have to be from different cities throughout the United States, different cities throughout the world. If you need a specialty surgery, and you might not even know you need a specialty surgery. I'll give you an example. I'm going to do a lot of examples today because examples tell everything. Guys getting their prostate glands cut out that want to avoid impotence. Or incontinence. If you have prostate cancer, generally you're told to cut the gland out. Even if you kill the gland with radioactive pellets, you're still going to become impotent. And on that basis, you want the kind of specialized prostate surgery that tends to spare sexual function and definitely your urinary continence. For many people, that's a specialty surgery. And you can go into every single organ of the entire body, and I got to tell you the truth, there's 15 ways to do the job. And the doctor, the surgeon you consult with, even the second surgeon you consult with, who might be from the same neighborhood and the same country club, isn't going to tell you about that surgery that's done across the United States that's been done for 20 years a different way with much higher success rates. So we're going to have a lot to say today during today's show about the ins and outs of negotiating relationships with doctors. Let me start with the first one. Get second opinions. Yeah, you've heard that before, of course. You don't need to listen to this show to know if you're facing a surgery, you want a second opinion. Well, what you need to know that you're not going to hear too many other places is don't get a second opinion in the same city. Because doctors cluster together in groups, they cluster together in opinions. I guarantee you, you will thank me for the rest of your life if you hear what I'm saying. If you're going to do any surgery, make sure you get opinions outside the box and outside the city you get your main opinions from. And of course, then there's the issue of, is it covered in my health care plan? Well, I don't want to get into the politics and the finances today. I do want to tell you that the difference between surgery A and surgery B can affect you monetarily. Let's just talk money for the rest of your lives in the way that would make you glad to pay an extra $15,000 or $30,000 out of pocket. To do the surgery incorrectly, or to be left incontinent, to be left impotent, to be left with any one of a number of side effects that doctors consider cost-benefit worth the cost, when you could go out of state or even out of the country, spend the extra $25,000 to $30,000 to $50,000 and be relieved of the side effect, is well worth the cost. Let me just say that before getting into everything else. And of course, you've got to break these eventually, not today's show, but down surgery to surgery to surgery. So let me start by saying, when you're up for a surgery, and it's a complicated process, and you're going to be left with side effects, I'll give you an example. A few years ago, I had a woman with esophageal cancer. She came in, she had esophageal cancer, and she asked me what to do. She took, this is a few years ago, it's a true story, it's going to blow your mind. She took advice from three different endoscopists in the Southern California area, all of whom told her ultimately, we can't shave the inner lining of your esophagus. We can't do that. And the reason we can't do that is the cancer's too deep. You're going to have to cut your esophagus out. Now, that esophagus, if you don't know, right, it connects your mouth to your stomach. That esophagus is a long drink of water. And it is something that when you have to cut it out, your life changes. It changes in a drastic way. Even if the surgery is successful, even if you get all the cancer, even if you never see cancer again, off an esophagectomy, your life is going to change drastically. So here's this woman. She's got good resources financially and otherwise. She gets great opinions from the leading endoscopists of Southern California. And they all agree, cut out the organ, cut out the esophagus. We cannot shave it. The cancer's too deep. All right? You've got the scenario now. All right. She tells this to me, and I tell her, I want you to go to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. I want you to go to the Mayo Clinic because I know someone there that knows someone there. And I know that they approach this differently. Now, it didn't sink into this woman because, of course, she's going to be surrounded by family. It's a high tense, high stress situation. For as much as you want to make the right move, you want to get it over with. You want to put it behind you. And over time, when you have entire institutions in white coats telling you to do this a certain way, it starts to wear down your resistance. But, God bless her, intelligence prevailed. So she goes to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. She meets some doctor that tells her, listen, for the last 15 or 20 years, we've been doing another type of surgery that prevents an esophagectomy, meaning that you don't need to cut the organ out. It's simply another type of scraping surgery, only this doctor informs this woman that you can scrape much deeper. And since in her case, the doctor says, the cancer's not that deep, nothing that this alternate surgery couldn't handle, the doctor tells her that if she does this scrape surgery, saves her esophagus, she has an only 1% chance of ever seeing cancer again. This is what the doctor tells her. Now, you can imagine the look in this woman's face when she's told by one of the leading doctors in the Mayo Clinic, a highly trusted reservoir of medical knowledge, that after all, there's another surgery that you can do to save your esophagus, and that it's been done for over a decade, and that once done, you only have a 1% chance of recurrence. after this woman had been told by leading endoscopists with great educations, great credentials, all the awards, considering themselves the best in their field, and she's emphatically, with unanimity, told, you got to cut out your esophagus. Anybody want to bet me I can give you a dozen examples like this? I could do two shows on examples like this. So let's open the show with an agreement. If you need a surgery that's going to have debilitating side effects and your doctor in Southern California considers that surgery, well, this is what we got to do, and it makes sense because it's life-saving. You get on the internet. You do your Google searches. And when you find a doctor that'll usually have YouTubes that basically says, I do it differently and you don't lose your sex life. You don't lose your esophagus. You don't such and such. You get on the phone with that doctor, and if you have to go out of state, you find the money to do so. If it's out of your plan, my advice to you is find the money to do so. So there's agreement one between me and you, that you'll keep an open mind about the options. Now, what works against this in your mind is you think, and this is where you make the mistake, and this is why I do the show. You think that medical approaches are homogenized. Well, the truth is they are homogenized. Meaning you've got a lot of unanimity within the AMA. Doctors, medical doctors do a fantastic job of basically all agreeing that this is the standard of care that we're going to use. But capital B, capital U, capital T. But there are serious differences on the inside. You have to get on the inside. Do you know this woman said to her Southern California doctors? She said, I've heard about this other type of surgery that would spare my esophagus and yet get all the cancer. And she was basically told in so many words, I don't know anything about that. That's mumbo jumbo. There's a lot of infighting. There's a lot of time. So let's not get critical. There's a lot of time between some group of doctors at some section of some part of America consistently do a surgery that they may have imported from outside the United States, brought it into their group, got permission to perform that way, are still sanctioned and within the standard of care. There's a gap time between that and the time it goes broadstream. You have to respect that gap time. You have to be ahead of the curve. I had another individual, a 65-year-old man, a number of years ago, that was up for a valve replacement. He had to have his aortic valve replaced. And he had some great doctors from hospitals in Southern California who were outstanding. They had all the accolades, all the credentials, all the awards, the whole thing. In fact, this was a gentleman that only saw the best. When he talked about his medical team, he'd always make sure you knew that you were talking to a guy that only gets the best. So I'm listening to this guy, and he's up for an aortic valve replacement. The day before the aortic valve replacement, that was the Robin Williams. Remember Robin Williams, the comedian? He had the aortic valve replaced, and then a number of years later, he got very depressed, and then he ultimately committed suicide. Well, if you go into the literature, lots of people that get these valves replaced end up getting very depressed, and it has to do with the machinery they use and little emboluses that go to the brain during the surgery. And I don't want to get into that today, but I just want to give you an example once again of a guy whose cardiac team is about to perform a standard aortic valve replacement. And the day before the surgery, get this, the day before the surgery, his cardiologist calls him and says, by the way, we'll be putting in a pacemaker. Now, here's a guy going in thinking he's just going to have a valve replaced. And is inadvertently toned, like casually, the day before the surgery, you think this is at some little bimbo hospital in the woods? No, this is a major, major icon of medical knowledge within the city of Los Angeles. And he's informed casually that, by the way, we're going to put a pacemaker in also. Do you understand the ramifications of a pacemaker? As a life-saving procedure, great. Well, this gentleman canceled his surgery. He said, I'm canceling the surgery. He said, if you told me this 2 weeks ago or a month ago, one thing. But you call me up the day before you're going to put in a new valve and you tell me, by the way, like it's nothing, we're just going to slip in a pacemaker. This guy cancels the surgery. Under my suggestion, he hires somebody to get on the websites and start looking for aortic valve replacements that will not require, by virtue of the specific surgery, the addition of a pacemaker. And sure enough, he finds another surgeon from another country working at one of the main hospitals in Southern California and simply explains to my client that the only reason you needed a pacemaker is because there are differing sizes. Now get this, different sizes of the aortic valves. So the artificial valves that they put in, whether it's a pig valve, whether it's a synthetic valve, whether it's a cadaver, the different sizes actually determine whether or not you're going to need a pacemaker. And the size of the valve they were going to put in was large enough to necessitate a pacemaker. His new surgeon tells him, I'm just going to use the smaller valve with the smaller insert. And on that basis, you won't need a pacemaker because we will not damage the nerves around the heart. Just the size of the valve, just some little detail making the difference between a pacemaker and not a pacemaker. Just a slight difference in the application of therapy, making the difference between having your entire esophagus cut out and having it saved and then being told you only have a 1% chance of ever seeing esophageal cancer again. And I could go on and on and on. So today's show, negotiating with your medical doctor, the art of the deal. It is a negotiation. It's a negotiation. You know, one of the things people do when they talk to medical doctors, they go to either side of the fence, and on both sides, you're abused. You either walk in on your hands and knees, especially to a surgeon, and it's understandable. So I'm not being critical. It's understandable that, in a sense, metaphorically, you're on your hands and your knees. Because if this guy's in a bad mood the day he's cutting into your body, which is quite a commitment, the day he's cutting into your body, if he's having a bad day, if you get the sense he's annoyed with you, if he's decided, as humans might, he just doesn't like you. You've been a pain in the neck. You've crossed the line. You said something insulting. You get this eerie feeling that you don't want a guy that's annoyed with you cutting into your brain. And so what you do is you come in on your hands and knees. And you're very humble and very respectful and you're nervous and you blabber your words and you completely ruin your experience. Don't do that. Don't. Do not get falsely humble when you're talking to your surgeon. Be respectful. Don't be arrogant. But be direct. Get into a conversation. Understand that it's going to work against you if you get, well, let's just say you put your surgeon on a pedestal. Do not do that because it's false. It's not sincere. Surgeons aren't stupid. The same surgeon you're putting on a pedestal is the same surgeon you're going to go after hook, crook, and barrel with a lawyer if something goes wrong. Surgeons know this. They understand this holier-than-thou attitude that people bring to them. It's not real. It's not you. It's not the Holy Spirit working through you. It's your fear. It's a compensatory posturing. It's placating somebody, and it doesn't work. You will not feel good if your relationship with your prospective surgeon is based on a holier-than-thou attitude. I'll tell you a classic example. You're in a holier-than-thou state, and you ask your endoscopist, is there another way to do this without taking out my esophagus? And he poo-poos the reply and the statement and just tells you, no, we have to cut this out. It's not going to work for endoscopy. If you're down there on your hands and knees, you're in no position to further the conversation. You just got shut down. You can't do this. So that attitude towards the doctor, like everyone else, the guy across the desk wants respect. He deserves respect. You never get arrogant. You don't get cocky. There's ways of saying things that are common to saying things to anybody, to the cashier at Starbucks. And you have to remember that. Those of us in the holistic community, you don't come in with an attitude. At the same time, don't do the other thing. Let's keep going here. Why is a guy going to tell you that you need a surgery when you might have an alternative surgery, or you might not need a surgery? You got to consider that. And too often people jump to the notion that the surgeon just wants to make money. He needs to buy another house off your heart valve or the brain surgery. It does not work like that. Yes, of course, there are surgeons that might be that way. But by and large, no surgeon is thinking about telling you to do a surgery that you might not need or could avoid or could put off because he's got this concept in his head that he needs to make another payment on the condo. It does not work that way. I know enough surgeons. I know enough medical doctors. I've been around more than long enough to tell you, really, by and large, percentage-wise, 99.9% of the time, surgeons are not there to give you the screw in a way where they know they're giving it to you and they don't care because they're mean people. If any of you think that, please do not think that. Don't think that at all. But what you have to understand, this is the other side now, is that if the only thing you have is a hammer, you're going to find nails. If the only thing you do is a certain kind of surgery, your entire engine, your whole mechanism, in terms of the standard of care, in terms of medical ethics, is to determine whether or not that surgery is required. And when you only have one tool and no alternative, you are going to be inherently biased. You got to get that. If surgeons jump the gun, it's because they're inherently biased because it's all that they do. You have to remember that. And you have to know how to work around that. You have to know a couple of little things. I'm going to tell you the first thing. I'm just going to use examples. I can't use every example for every surgery, but we'll do the best we can today's show. Hip replacements, knee replacements. Let me tell you the way it works. The way it works is if you're 70 years old and a doctor sees a knee replacement on the way, his natural inclination is to do it now. Because if he waits 5 years, whereupon you might really need it, he's got you 5 years later, 5 years older. 5 years later means more risk. Those of you in that 70 plus time, that 70 plus age group, you have to understand that it is good medical ethics. And I said ethics, it's moral. It's not just the standard of care, it's moral to get you on the table sooner than later. Now, you might not see it that way. You might look at it, especially if you're from the holistic community, you might look at it as, I'm doing a surgical consult to see if I must do a surgery, because if I don't have to do the surgery now, I'm going to go see about an alternative solution before I do the surgery. To a medical doctor, to a surgeon, there is no alternative solution. They don't know they exist. They hear about them, but if it's not in their standard of care, it's not real. Do you understand that? I want my audience today to really get this. Just don't say you get it. You got to really get this. The surgeon you're seeking a consult with, especially for joint replacement, is a surgeon that's going to look at you at 70 years old, and whether you need that surgery within a year or two or whether you need it in 5 years, the tendency is to think, and in a way it's understandable, that there is no alternative. So the sooner you do it, the better. The sooner you do it, the better you're out of pain. The sooner you do it, the better you can get back to your lifestyle. The sooner you do it, the less the risk during surgery. I got news for you if you didn't know. Hip replacements are major operations. Hip replacements are a big, big, big deal. You don't want to be doing a hip replacement at 80 years old. You may have to, but any surgeon that considers himself moral, ethical, will want to do the surgery at 70 rather than 80. And you know what? If there were no alternatives, if there really were no alternatives, and to that there aren't, that would be a good choice to do it sooner. Now, that's not the way you look at it. You have a host of people from the chiropractors to the acupuncturist to the Pilates therapist to the physical therapists, to all sorts of sports rehab people with all sorts of ideas from the outside that are saying, no, you can do this differently and save yourself the surgery. No, you're not ready for the surgery. No, you don't need the surgery. Thus the great divide. You go to the surgeon says, hey, it's bone on bone. You need the surgery. Somebody else says a little prolotherapy, a little platelet cell therapy, some good physical therapy, some good stretching, change the biomechanics, work out the adhesions, bada bing, bada bang, bada boom, and you're as good as new. Look at the disparity between the two. To the surgeon, there are no alternatives. If it's not within his standard of care, meaning everyone gets together and says, yes, this is a potential choice. This is an approved, FDA-approved option. Unless it's within the surgeon's standard of care, it doesn't exist. It doesn't care that his uncle or his nephew is a chiropractor. It doesn't matter that his wife might be into alternative medicine. It doesn't matter that some article says that you can substitute hip surgeries with Pilates. It doesn't matter to a surgeon. You got to understand the cult of the American Medical Association. And I don't mean cult in a bad sense. One of the geniuses of the evolution of medicine was called the standard of care. You really have to understand what that means. You must understand what that means. Because what it means is, if it's not within their toolbox, it doesn't exist. Oh, it's pending. It might work. There's been rumors around it. Their best friend swears by it. To the standard of care, you do not care. There's nothing else but what's in your toolbox. If it's not there, don't talk to me about it. And of course, this is what the innocent public does all the time with the medical doctors. Dr. Smith, what do you think about ginseng as a supplement to make my cognitive abilities better or to give me energy? Don't ask your surgeon, don't ask your medical doctor these questions. Is it okay if I take this herb to lower my blood pressure? Don't ask your doctors these questions. These are not good questions. Anytime you're asking a medical doctor to tell you it's okay to do something outside the standard of care, you're asking that doctor to commit a mortal sin. The law in medicine is stick to the standard of care. If you stick to the standard of care, you are protected. If you stick to the standard of care, you are ethical. If you stick to the standard of care, if all the soldiers do everything pluperfect according to the book, the textbook, no deviation at any given time, you are a more competent, efficient, medically ethical doctor. And that is what medical doctors are taught. So you come along with your great questions about herbal solutions to doctors who were being taught the standard of care of pharmaceutical drugs. I laugh. I see clients do this all the time. I see my clients do this all the time. They come into my office and say, I asked my medical doctor about this nutritional supplement. You're not going to get reality from a medical doctor. They haven't studied nutritional supplements. Many nutritional supplements haven't been studied. Many nutritional supplements are used empirically, meaning we only know they work because we see them work, and we see them work sometimes, not all the time. At best, at least we know they're not going to hurt you when they're used. That's about as good as it gets for a lot of nutritional supplements. After that, it's hit or miss. And on that basis, and because it's not in the standard of care, your medical doctors pull miles and miles and miles away from that. I mean, have you noticed now the advertisements saying, my doctor told me to take CoQ10 with my statin drug? That's been around for 30 or 40 years. Well, I don't know exactly, but it's been around for over a couple of decades. We all knew statin drugs deplete your CoQ10, and now it's finally out there. It takes years before even simple stuff gets into the mainstream of allopathy. You really have to respect that. So one of the things you don't do is bring all your nutritional, all your supplementary nutritional questions to your doctor. Now, if that doesn't get through your skull, let me give you another way of saying it. In other words, rather than saying, hi, Dr. Smith, can I take this herbal supplement? Would you approve that? Would you basically tell me it's okay to do this? Rather than do that, which I am telling you not to do, an alternative, if that doesn't grab you, is to tell them you're taking it. Tell them, I'm taking a nutritional supplement. Do you have any strong objections? Now, that's a different question. And that basically protects your doctor. You have to protect your doctor with the questions that you ask them. Protecting the doctor is what the doctor's going to think about long before you get reality. How's that one? There's another concept. Another concept that you have to keep in mind when you're talking to your medical doctor is they have basically spent many years getting that license, and they are going to protect that at all costs. And I am telling you, when I mean at all costs, I mean at all costs. If it's going to cost you, believe me, it's going to cost you before it costs them. And on that basis, you have to be respectful of that, and you have to protect them. So asking them to approve a nutritional supplement when it's not in their standard of care is not protecting them, so you're going to find they're not going to do it. Here's another one. Cutting down on drug dosages. When you're talking to your allopathic doctor and you want to cut down on a blood pressure med, or you want to cut down on your Prozac, or you want to cut down on an anti-inflammatory, your prednisone, here's another thing. Doctors, medical doctors, know drugs have side effects. That's not new to them. And I say this because so many people in the holistic community, you know, I don't like these drugs. They have these side effects. I looked these side effects up. There are 5 pages of side effects. And with all these side effects, how could this drug be any good? And this is what they do. And so the minute the doctor says, you know, you need to take this drug because your blood pressure is through the roof, you have people that haul off and start slamming the MD. You got to understand how harmful this is. This thing about my doctor wants to kill me with all these drugs. Okay, there is a biasness. I got it. And I'll back that statement. However, on the other hand, to the credit of many medical doctors, they don't want you on drugs. Yes, I know they are the first to put you on drugs because it's the standard of care. But they also know that if there were a way approved within their board of taking you down off the drugs, they'd be glad to do it because they know the side effects are not good. Now, you really got to trust that. Trust me on that. Don't doubt me on that statement. Now you got to put some of the pieces of the puzzle together. The question for you when you want to come down off a drug is, can you protect your medical doctor in the way you ask the question? If you've been on blood pressure meds for years and your blood pressure, once outrageously high, is now stabilized within the norm and your medical doctor's happy with the number, and you say to the medical doctor, you know, I found this herbal supplement. I'd like to try the herbal supplement. Would you mind if I go down off the blood pressure meds? Do you realize how crazy that question is? That's like asking a medical doctor to put his head in a guillotine. You cannot do it that way. It doesn't work that way. You cannot take your medications. Now, there are exceptions. Something like prednisone. When you get really hurt, like if your kidney blows up and it's on its way to renal failure and they have to use prednisone, and prednisone in high dosages has really bad, or if they do a IV prednisone because it's really that bad, and you're on prednisone month after month at high milligram dosages, your doctors want you off that fast. So there are exceptions, but by and large, once a doctor puts you on a drug, you're on the drug for life. Lots of clients say, well, you know, I was surprised. My doctor said you're on it for life. You know, they want us to be on these drugs for life. I only thought it was a month or two, and it's for life. I asked him, could I get off? And he said, no, you're all be on it for life. You got to understand what's going on here. When you want to get off a drug, the question to your medical doctor is not one that puts a guillotine or a noose around his neck, which is, can I take off this drug now? Never ask that question. What you say to the doctor is, I'm lowering the dosages. You say to your doctor, I, John Q. Smith, I'm going to lower the dose of this by 10% or 15%. Do you think that this could be dangerous to my health? Or you say, statistically, I'm going to come down on this very slightly. I'm going to do it. I know you don't want me to, but I want to get off these. If I lower it a little bit, in your experience, am I going to end up in a very bad situation? That's as close as you can get to that question and get reality. Now, let me tell you the caveat. The caveat, if you ask the question that way. If you say to your doctor, I've been on this drug, I don't like the side effects, I understand why I had to go on it, but I want to lower dose. I'm doing it. And you tell him you're doing it in a way where he knows you're going to do it. If you're doing something very dangerous, that doctor will tell you, you are out of your mind. Now, you got to compare that to a scenario where, statistically, if you lower that dose 10 or 15 or 20%, statistically, you're not going to have a problem. So one, we all know you never cold turkey a drug. You never take it upon yourself to go off a drug. I don't care what drug it is. Unless your MD tells you it's okay. You never, unless you're told otherwise by a medical doctor, usually the one that prescribed it, that you can go off it cold turkey, you never do that. But if you want to broach the topic, you never say, can I go off it? Can I have your approval to go off this? That's the guillotine around the doctor's neck. What you say is, I'm going off. I'm lowering my blood pressure meds because my blood pressure's dropping. I'm lowering my thyroid meds because my blood work suggests it. What you try to do is paint a scenario based on lab work or just your own intuitive sense of things. That's telling the doctor you're going to do it, and then you let it go. And I'll tell you why that's a good idea. Because if you tell your doctor you're going to do it, and they feel you're doing something that's dangerous, they're going to tell you, and you're going to sense their sincerity. If you're on Coreg because you have congestive heart failure, something like Coreg, and you tell your doctor, I'm lowering the dose of Coreg, the doctor's going to tell you, if you do that, you're not going to be my patient and you should buy yourself a grave. And the doctor's right. Your cardiologist is right. You never lower Coreg. You don't do something like that. And you don't take it upon yourself to do something like that. But if you go to your doctor and you say, I'm lowering my Coreg, the doctor's going to tell you, you are out of your cotton picking mind. If you tell your doctor you're going to lower your glucose meds because you feel your blood sugar's better. If you tell him you're going to lower your blood pressure meds a little bit, 10, 15, 20%, that's right. You're going to find a very different response. They're never going to tell you, oh, I think that's a great idea. That is a rare doctor that'll do that. What the doctor will do is by omission. They will not fight passionately your choice when they know statistically it's in your favor. Okay, now that's something on the inside. And this answers a big issue for many people. All right, let's keep going. Let's talk about herbs. Let's talk about the way doctors look at herbs. First of all, when you make a statement like turmeric, I'll talk about turmeric and curcumin in turmeric, which is one of the active components. If you say to your doctor, is turmeric an anti-inflammatory? Is it an antioxidant? The first thing your doctor is going to say is, I don't know. I didn't study herbs. But let's just say your doctor is a little more informed. Your doctor might say, yes, the studies show it's an antioxidant. And the people that sell turmeric can say, turmeric's an antioxidant. And if you tell your family at Christmas dinner, I take turmeric because it's a known antioxidant, and somebody argues the case, well, guess what? You can respond with a litany, a volume, a 15-foot-high pile of peer-reviewed, extremely hard science in the journals to conclude that turmeric is an antioxidant. You can do that. But you see, that's not what's being done with herbs. I want you to get this now. What's being done with herbs is what people do with herbs is they say, turmeric is good for joint pain. Turmeric is good because it'll increase your energy. Ginseng is good because it'll increase your cognitive ability. What they do rather than quote the article and what the article can be used for in terms of the mechanism of the herb is they jump to a symptomatic control, meaning they make a claim that the herb can be used to help a symptom. Now, that's what nutrition does mainstream. If you tell that to your medical doctor, he thinks you're nuts. Frankly, I often agree with him. That is a nutty thing to do with an herb. And you have to start getting this, meaning just because an herb is written up in a journal, hard science, meaning a reputable, peer-reviewed scientific journal often funded by the NIH, something with a lot of names behind it from a lot of medical universities inside and outside the United States, a lot of MD, PhDs behind the article, in a double-blind placebo or the equivalent of it. Just because you can find arguments to support the efficacy of the herb, say turmeric is an antioxidant, ginseng as something that vasodilates blood flow to the brain, doesn't mean you can jump, extrapolate is the word, out of that into the realm of ginseng, well, that'll improve your cognitive ability, and turmeric, that'll improve your joint pain. That is where it all goes south. It's a subtlety. Again, one of Medici's shows. It's a show you're going to have to listen to again. We'll have this show up within 2-3 hours. You get on the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com. Straighttalk with 2 T's.cc. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. 20-plus years in the health game. And one of my passions is to give to you the inside track on what all this holistic stuff is about. Because few people have suffered it as much as I have. You know, the public suffers, the doctors suffer more because the doctors give their entire lifetime, 10, 20, 30 years of time, education, money, to understanding what within the holistic spectacle works and what, like a lot of medical doctors say, is a lot of baloney. And holistic medicine has, because it's in its evolution, a lot of stuff, a lot of claims that aren't going to be there over the next decade or two or three. So one of the reasons I do the show is to give you what I know is sound advice, what works. And what usually ends up being the case, and this is just like, you know this from your own life, what usually works is down the middle. Everybody's got a valid point and everybody's got a irrational biasness. Everyone's got a piece of life figured out from their own experience. And everybody's got a piece of life that they're slanted, that's not rational. That's part of their irrationality, that's part of their slant. Conclusions that they drew under duress over many years, usually to keep their jobs. It's very easy to keep your profession going by becoming irrational and slanting reality. By golly, that's why we invented science, supposedly. But just like the news today, fake news, well, there's lots of fake science. And there's lots of fake science on both ends. I think it was this week we just indicted some big pharmaceutical head for falsifying evidence. I mean, it's everywhere. In the ideal, science is truly objective. In the reality, it's almost as slanted as anything. So you got to develop a snooter, a second sense for how to dig out of both sides, both allopathic and holistic reality. And what I'm telling you is usually reality is down the middle. That's not the way we think, right? We're a split country. You're a liberal or you're a conservative. What, Enron was something that liberals didn't make a clear-cut point about? Liberals stating that Enron was an example of how corporations give us the screw? As a conservative, you're supposed to argue that, and vice versa. As a liberal, when you're attacked because Common Core, because you have to teach a class now from the bottom up instead of from the top down, is not an indictment of the way, as Americans, we've evolved? Well, how can a liberal really defend that? And there's so many examples like this. There's truth from both sides, and I want you to get that point about today's show. When a medical doctor is telling you that there is no alternative to surgery because he's never heard of one, when in fact his own colleagues may be doing it down the street, or in another state, well, that's a biasness. At the same time, when a medical doctor cautions you to be intelligent about getting off pharmaceutical drugs or intelligent about whether or not it's worth your investment to do nutritional medicine, well, maybe that's not so biased. Maybe there's a lot of essence there. All right, you get my point. Here's another thing about herbs when herbs are studied. When herbs are studied, they're studied in the same models that we study pharmaceutical drugs. Does anybody understand the stupidity of that? Herbs are out of the earth. Herbs are plants. Herbs come from nature. Nature comes from God. The sun, the stars, the cosmos. Things we have only speckles of understanding. And one thing I can assure you from working with nutritional supplements for a long time is if you don't have the autonomic nervous system, if you don't have your electrical system, if you don't have clear conduits to God, if you don't have the electromagnetic nature of you working in accord, what comes out of the earth in plant form will not work in your body. If your nervous system is not balanced, if it's not aligned, if your spirit is not aligned, if your body is not a conduit for the spiritual in a physiological sense, not in your fantasy, not because you do Bible study, but because you really are inhabiting the Word of God. Unless that's the case, herbs don't work. Wow. How can you say that? How could I even say that? Don't doubt me. Watching who herbs work with and who herbs don't work with for a long time, on my own and watching others, scientifically, we say, just read Hans Selye, The Stress of Life. Hans Selye, S-E-L-Y-E, Hans, from Montreal. Famous, famous, famous medical doctor. Statues of him everywhere. His whole life's work was to tell you if the sympathetic and parasympathetic nerves are not balanced, don't expect your physiology, your cell biology, your biochemistry, your biophysics to work correctly. Nothing could be truer about the dividing line between those who respond to herbs and those who don't. Now, that is not a requirement for Tylenol or prednisone or antibiotics. It doesn't matter who you are, what you are, how you think. There is nothing about your nervous system that needs to be in accord with a pharmaceutical drug. So pharmaceutical drugs are perfect for the scientific method because it's much easier to reproduce the effect because the variables are much easier to control. Oh, if those of you listening today could truly understand what I'm saying. Please listen to this show again. I don't think I've ever, ever said it more clearly to anybody. The pharmaceutical system and the scientific method are perfect for each other. Because pharmaceutical drugs don't need the cooperation of the autonomic nervous system. Herbs demand it. And the variability in a person's autonomic aptitude is such that it makes it very difficult to study an herb in terms of its efficacy. You can't do it the way you do it for Tylenol. If you're new to the show, just driving, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. I am a health provider for people in Costa Mesa in Southern California, in the United States, and outside of the United States. And what I try to do with people who have health concerns is get them cued in to what right action is about. To me, there is only one science, and there's only one medicine, and that's the one that works. And if it means you do surgery, you do it. If it means you take a drug, you do it. If it means you get off a drug, you do it. And if it means you don't do any of it, then you find other means of remedying your problem. But it requires education. Have you gotten educated about where to put your retirement funds? Have you gotten educated? Has anyone felt the need to get a little bit more on top of the political arena in the last year or two? I certainly know I have. Well, I'm going to throw health. I'm asking you to consider that really, where the rubber hits the road in the health equation is about people getting more educated, and that means you. There isn't anything I say in these shows that you don't need to listen to again and again and again. And yeah, you're busy, and yeah, there's no time, and yeah, there are more important things, and you really got to consider the cost to your pocketbook when you get sick. You really got to consider the cost over 10 to 20 to 30 years when you live in chronic illness, when you've lived a half life, as many people live, because they haven't really put it together yet. You have to consider that the cost to get educated relative to that cost is nothing. Okay. Much said. Let's keep going. That's right. There's never enough. There's never enough time. Okay. Write down your questions. When you see a medical doctor, please write your questions down. Don't go into a medical doctor thinking you'll know what to say, because you're not going to. Because the time it takes you in a limited engagement to articulate an intelligent question using terms you haven't even heard of makes your case loaded against you. Whereupon, if you know what you're going in for, if you do, often you do, the majority of medical visits, whether it's for your cataract surgery or for your heart surgery, a valve replacement, how you're going to manage your diabetes, your renal stuff. I mean, how many people have conversations and appointments with doctors and don't even know the basics of their disease? Guys, it's not so complicated. It's really not so complicated. To get the basics down of your medical condition is something that allows you to be more articulate. And if you take the time to basically put it in writing and you hand it to the doctor and you say, "Doc, listen, here's 7 questions." I mean, be reasonable. Don't give the guy 4 volumes in a 10-minute office visit. But if you give him 4 or 5 good questions and you write them down, you have made his life so much easier. You have cut down on the time. You've cut down on the awkwardness. You've cut down on the embarrassment. And of course, ask the doctor if you can record the conversation. Ask the doctor, "Can I record the conversation?" That's a pro and a con. A lot of times they're not going to say certain things if they're recorded, and that may not be necessary, but it's just a weird thing in the way it works. But definitely at least put yourself down And don't handwrite it. Do not hand doctors your scribble. The scribble you scribbled while you were at a red light on the way to the doctor's office, don't do that. It makes them nauseous. Make it typewritten. Show you put a little time ahead of time and hand it to them immediately. If you're going to a doctor to do a consult and you have a history, the truth, your history is so important. The truth, your doctor never even reads it. Doctors show up, and what is in their hand, they read, and that's about it. And they make decisions, and they don't look at your history. And another thing, when you call into the doctor's office and you say, make sure the doctor reads my history, it doesn't happen. You think his assistant, his office manager, is going to tell him and follow through. Forget it. It does not happen. But if you come to the doctor and say, here's a 2-page concise history, here's 5 questions I need answered, you've just aced your relationship. And praise them. Praise them. Don't placate them. Praise them. There's a difference. Find what, sincerely speaking, you find redeemable about your medical doctor. You know, I'm not doing a show on this, but medical doctors don't feel so good. The golden age of being a medical doctor is gone. I hope you understand that. 40 years ago, you know, your parents come here from some ghetto in Europe. Your son's smart. He goes to medical school. I mean, that's the golden age. You follow the trends in college today. Your smartest don't flock to medical school. They don't do it anymore. The socialized system, the HMO system, it's taken a lot of autonomy and money away from doctors. Any of you old enough to remember the early 90s when these changes began, knew doctors that said, I wouldn't be a doctor if you paid me double, because they've lost a lot. So you got to pump them up. You got to give them credit where it's due. You got to get real with them. You got to twist their arms. You got to give them the Indian sunburn. And if you do it right and you think of it as a negotiation, you'll develop a relationship. Okay, 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. That's my office. Call, talk to my wonderful staff, come in, see me, get your health stuff looked at, resolved, sent in the right direction, most of all educated. God bless you. I'll see you next week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.